Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I do feel, I mentioned early in the show, I Was Right Radio might be coming up later in the show. It might be right now. I tested.
Where Nick was right?
Isn't that a segment already?
We'll rip that off.
What have you learned? What have I learned?
Well, why are you smarter?
I have a theory on why
about
I'm smarter.
What?
Mitch, please.
Dude, let me talk.
About what?
About the Browns.
You know, we at the Fan have to focus. The Fan focus. I don't know. That was a bridge too far.
At work.
Just do drops after drop.
We're like, I can't remember. I don't think I can say it. The Parks and Recreation, the local community, like the ripoff Morning Zoo show. I can't remember what it's called. So this is a great bit. Really doing a great job here. But now back to reality. Two nights ago, I said Matt Boyd, yeah, boy, having a good start would settle a lot of Guardians fans down and start to cure the ills. And then I threw out the stat line that I think, building off the Matt Boyd, again, what is it, 5 1/3 inning, 1 earned, 6 Ks, that Alex Cobb could maybe throw out there last night. And I felt like if you got close to it, it was going to maybe have Guardians fans flipping a switch. Well, I had said 6 innings, you know, 3 earned or less, but 1 earned would be perfect, and the Guardians get a win. Well, Alex Cobb went 5 2/3 last night, gave up 1 earned, 5 base runners, so below a 1 whip for the night, and it happened. Because we've just hammered rotation. It took 2 starts for fans who have been on the fence. I think most of us have been, no, it's a really good team. Nowadays, we got to figure out the pieces. How do you make this work in the postseason? But I think some of the I'm on the fence to the Guardian stuff, I think some of that's been overplayed. I think most people, guys, there were 30,000 people, allegedly. I don't know, I heard that on the morning show, and I realized that Lima might have said it, and so now I have to run it through the BS meter. There were 30,000 people on a Wednesday night in the ballpark. I know the Cubs are in town. That's a big market team. There's history there. It's 30,000 people on a Wednesday night at a Guardians game. So I do think most people are on board with this team. But I think last night and the last 2 nights with the rotation have given people reason to be a little bit more confident that the worst baseball the Guardians have played is behind them.
You certainly hope so, man. They played very well the last 3 nights.
Yeah.
So we had 7 in a row now? How many in a row?
It's not 7 in a row.
How many in a row?
5 in a row.
5 in a row.
Yeah. Because you won the last 2 games of the Minnesota series.
I say 7. Yeah.
I would wish it was 7.
It could be 7.
It could be 7. You're going against Savali on Friday night. He's not been great in either Tampa or Milwaukee this year. I said flip the switch yesterday, which might just be stealing jargon from the morning show, more stealing bits. But I think, I think it's okay right now. If I don't even know if it's newfound rotational confidence, but I think it shows you a glimmer of what the Guardians have been driving at. And I don't think it's going to take a lot more of that kind of performance. And guys, right now, 5 1/3, 5 2/3 with one earned. I don't know if you're watching much baseball. That's about as good as it gets, whether you throw 99 miles an hour or whether you throw 94 like Matt Boyd.
Boyd. We got to get that in the stadium.
We do.
But they did it once.
Yeah, they did. Well, they did a year.
We need it more.
We do, because everything should be about us. And I think that's how we beat the cabal, right? We're in a it's the Cold War of against the cabal. Ken, Lima, they lead the cabal. There's other members. You can figure out who it is.
It's a cabal.
It is. They're caballing, and that's fine. But we're a threat
just
to the cabal.
Caballing.
And I think the yeah, boyd, or Santa's got a brand new bag. I think these are the ways.
Got a brand new bag.
I think this is how we bring down the cabal.
Let's take them down.
Just one silly expression at a time. Now, I'll ask you.
Ask me.
I know it's only two stars, but I think for some people, I'll say it myself. I think it feels like the rotation is finally coming around. Does that give you newfound confidence in the Cardinals?
When you're holding these teams to just a couple of runs, I like that we have Cobb in the mix now.
You know what's wild about it?
What's wild?
They're still not playing their best baseball, but they're playing good enough to win. And so the funny thing is the streakiness here, and it's not since the All-Star break, they've had a couple streaky moments. I think that's just tied to the thin margin that is in baseball this year. I think there's a lot of really good teams, and there's a lot of different interesting matchups. But I think Cobb and Boyd have a chance to do something here. And Stephen Vogt, last night, after the win there with Alex Cobb on the bump, gave his thoughts on the additions of Cobb and Boyd.
They're professional pitchers, right? They're pros. They've been doing this for a long time. They know how to pitch. They know how to navigate lineups. Both of them have just come out throwing strikes, and that's what we love. And the efficient, quick innings are huge. And I think what it does is it gives a boost to our guys. You know, we've had a number of guys make excellent starts for us over the course of the year, but to add those two at this time of year is a nice boost for us just with their pedigree.
Like, I don't want to take a victory lap because it is one start from Matt Boyd, and it's two starts from Cobb, one of which have been good. But at least in practicality, is that not what the Guardians were hoping for? Yeah, in immensely small sample size, but is this not the whole point of their approach at the deadline? Hey, we can't afford a Yasai Kikuchi. We can't afford a Blake Snell. We can't afford a Garrett Crochet. So we're going to take two. I don't think they're both lottery tickets, but we're going to take two chances, hope one of them works out, and hope one of our other guys works out, and that gets you to five starters. So three starts in, there's proof to say that, and the Guardians took a shellacking. Like I said, it's great if it works out, but I don't know it's guaranteed to work out. But there were people who said, this is why the organization will never win. This is the rained heaven and hell down on everybody. Well, two starts in, guys, like, that's what it's supposed to look like. They don't have to be, when you're a good all-around team, you don't need Cobb or Boyd to be anything other than good. And that's what they were last night. They were not exceptional. Yeah. I love the word pitchability because you can see it with veterans. Like, both those guys are in baseball and have reached their level. In the case of Boyd, he was a fringe prospect who's massively overshot what people thought he would be in the bigs. It's because they're pitchable. They know how to work a count. They know how to get guys out. And I think you start then putting that to, well, how much pressure does that take off Lively, Gavin, and Tanner Bibee? And I think all of a sudden, now the rotation can just work itself out. You need to figure out who those five guys are, but if everybody stays healthy, yeah, this is it. This is that plan coming together. This is when you and I talked about, hey, two of the five guys that aren't in the rotation right now need to find themselves 1.5 times through the rotation with these guys. I think we're pretty damn close.
I'm trying to think. So when's the season officially end?
End of September, early October.
So how many more starts are these guys going to get, you think?
I would probably say 6, maybe 7.
Plenty, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Solid, well, sample size.
Actually, there's about 40 games left. So that's if you pitch every 5 games, that's 8 starts. And it's so funny because I think the thought is, well, but you don't have an ace right now. Okay. You do. Your ace is the bullpen. You've got 5 starters right now who might be able to give you 3 to 6 innings on any given night.
Like, if we're in a one-run game late in the game, I feel very confident that, again, up a run, that we're going to win the game.
I even think down a run. I think it goes back to what we were talking about with the Browns offense. You need to be able to start somewhere positive. So if you have a strong offensive line, mm-hmm. well, that's, you know, that's the that's filling the dam. That's something that you can push up against and say, this thing is the thing we can build around early in the season while we wait for other things to happen. I think it's almost deconstructionist that the Guardians started with a great offense and a great, an elite bullpen. And then over time, those things got out of whack because the rotation, they just kept having to piecemeal and make up for the rotation. If you don't have to make up for the rotation, the bullpen can settle into roles a little bit more identifiably. And you are four deep in high leverage guys right now. Sandlin is high leverage. Heron is high leverage. Cade Smith is high leverage. And Class A is high leverage. That's four innings. And because of the breakup and how games go in the postseason, guys, that's half a damn game. If you just need your starters to get you the fifth inning, oh, and by the way, if you figure this out in August, you can start, since you're no longer misfiring, okay, well now good offense leads to good rotation, and good rotation means you're not, you know, blowing out the bullpen, so now all of a sudden the bullpen can give you high leverage moments and get back to being elite. That's the goal has always been, with 3 weeks to go, let's be hitting on all cylinders. Let's play the best baseball late in the season, and I think we're kind of tracking that way. There's a lot of stuff that they don't control, namely the schedule. We can get to that. But I don't know how you don't look at the rotation the last two nights. And again, I think people are. I don't think that the holdouts who've said, it's just 70 wins, or, well, yeah, but you're only four games above the Twins. I think it's all been this, we're afraid to get burnt again, or we're afraid we're going to get embarrassed. I think this last week has shown you that, like, they're good. They're going to hang. And I don't think there's ever been any more reason to believe that that formula can kick into play here over the next couple of weeks, and by with three series to go, four series to go, five series to go, you can play your best baseball.
I'm excited for the final, whatever, 6 weeks of the season, Nick. I like the way that they're playing right now. And I like the attitude of the players, and also like the crowds, as I mentioned yesterday, have been phenomenal.
I think it's all coming together. We do have a little bit of news here there, Dusty. The Cavs have announced their 2024-2025 NBA regular season schedule. The season starts October 25th at Toronto, followed by the Cavs' home opener against Detroit at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse on the 25th of October. And some crucial numbers here, because the only thing anybody cares about is the national TV appearances. The Cavs will make 16 national TV appearances on TNT, ESPN, and NBA TV this year. That's four games on TNT, Boston, Indy, Orlando, and Indiana, four games on ESPN, another Orlando matchup, the Knicks, Boston, and Miami, and then eight games on NBA TV. That's eight games. We're not going to mention all eight of those. So 16 national TV appearances for the Cavs this year. Is that too many, too little, or just enough?
People always get worked up about this, and I really don't, because I don't really care about being on national TV. I love our local broadcast, and honestly, I'd prefer to watch the local broadcast for the most part over a national broadcast.
Are you pandering?
I'm not pandering.
To John, Michael, and the cast and crew?
I think John is fantastic. Obviously, Miss Fred, but and Reg Eye from back in the day. But like we've got a great broadcast team here in town.
Loves it.
We always have a good broadcast team.
I said loves herself. Austin Carr, Brad Doherty.
Yeah, AC's awesome. Brad's great.
Can I tell you the only games that I... Because, listen, I love when you're on TNT because you get to hear the crew talk about it. This will be the last year that that's a thing, right? Like, because this is the last year with the TNT crew, maybe, potentially, there's a lawsuit going on. We'll find out. But so those games do matter. I think ESPN's NBA coverage is horrid. And I want to be respectful because there are people that I like within the broadcasting crew, but I just don't. Horrid is too heavy. Can I take that back? Take it back. I think for how much they put into that, that just doesn't work. The same way, the pre and post game, the halftime show, don't work as well. as the Turner stuff. And I think Turner is the gold standard on NBA coverage, which is making it even more maddening that apparently Turner, out of sheer spite, is going to retain Charles Barkley, who's now claiming he turned down $100 million so people could keep their jobs at Turner. I'm going to want to see the paperwork on that one. But I don't even... Okay.
No way.
ESPN has miles to go before they have good enough coverage. I tell you the ones that I absolutely just can't deal with.
God.
NBA TV. I understand why it works like this. But if you have your own TV network, NBA TV, MLB TV, NFL Network, how can none of these networks have quality content when it comes to broadcasting games or analysis? There's some, like Good Morning Football, I do think has its... I get why people like that show. Most of the other stuff, it's just fodder. It's like some suit came up with some idea of what this should look like, but they drew with like two crayons. It's like some rudimentary picture that a 5-year-old would create, except 5-year-olds have more creativity in terms of the amount of crayons that they use. That's what network coverage and NBA TV is just awful. Their highlights are awful. Their game, the way they cover the games is awful. Why? I don't understand it. Those 8 games, it's a real... I don't know. I'll watch all of those 8 games. Every game that John and Brad and AC are on, I'm in on. Every ESPN game, even though I think their coverage should be so much better than it is, I'll watch. And it's not just... Like, I feel this way about any of the televised games on any of the league-owned networks. Dude, it is almost at a turn-off point because the coverage is so paltry, cheap, and uninspiring compared to what the leagues put into these assets.
I don't mind some of the play-by-play guys on the bigger networks, but like the studio stuff outside of TNT is just not good.
Well, and that I'm so glad you said that. I don't... Mike Breen's different. There are some...
I mean, I like Breen. I like Ian Eagle. Kevin Harlan's great.
There are some play-by-play guys that I will be more likely to tune in to like a national game if I know they're on it.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, it's the analysts that are my tune-in, tune-outs.
Man.
Well, but it's the analysts, or as you said, it's a studio show.
Yeah.
Like the amount of times, and I'm going to go back on the four-letter network on this one, the amount of times where it's been like, hey, Cavs, Celtics, huge game. Man, I got to tell you what we think about the Knicks. Hey, what's going on out west? It's like, no, there's a game going on that it's halftime of, and you've spent of a 25-minute halftime show, a 20-minute halftime show, you've spent 90 seconds bookending the entire halftime show with analysis of that game. Everything else has been, will LeBron leave the Lakers? But yeah, the NBA TV is not great. So the Cavs have announced their 2024-2025 NBA regular season schedule. They start the season in Toronto. The home opener 2 days later, October 25th, against the Pistons. Those feel like 2 wins. I'm going to call it right now. I'm locking it in. Cavs starting 2-0.
Locking it in.
You start against Toronto and Detroit. Ooh, the J.B. Bickerstaff revenge game comes early. Man, he's going to lose by 30. It's going to be a bloodbath. And then it's going to be Donovan Mitchell's fault.
I mean, it...
Hey, J.B., you got blown out of the building by 50 points in your return home to Cleveland. Well, you know, we're a young team. Yeah, it's a lot of growing pains. Got a lot of good young guys here. Don't worry, we'll get it figured out. Okay. Good luck with that. Now, with that being said, we were talking about the Guardians. And I was thinking about this because we're talking about... I do think the rotation looking like it's turning the corner, even though it's a small sample size, makes it feel like you can start to maybe take your excitement up a level. Maybe your fan hubris. Maybe that's a better way to put it. At the same point, I was thinking about this. Do you think that they'll actually win a World Series this year?
Well, I don't know.
So I don't mean to be because this is not a negative conversation. But I realized that for so long, I've been open to the hypothetical that they could win a World Series. That it's like, I've seen so many damn good teams not win a World Series that I don't even know what a World Series winning team looks like. Like, it should look like what we've seen.
I don't know that there is, like, a certain prototype for winning a title. I mean, is there? Yeah, you got to be really good. You got to have good pitching. You got to hit the ball. But, like,
it depends on the year. It depends on when you're
on who you're playing. The matchup matters. The pitching matchups obviously matter. You know, playing at home matters. I mean, just so many variables that could change every year that there's just... There's not going to be a Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, and we got into it about the idea of, and maybe this is the way we feel all the time, and we're just saying it specifically about the Guardians. It does feel like there's a wide variance. Like, I think if you said, would you be surprised if the Guardians got bounced out in the first round of the playoffs? Well, I mean, it's baseball, and it's really damn tough to win a series. Like, and your margin for error in those early series, if you don't get that first round bye, is nil. You can have two bad games and bye-bye, you know? At the same point, like you could make a definitive, strong-armed approach conversation. This is an argument they're going to lose in the first round. And you might be able to sway me that makes a lot of sense, that that's the most likely thing to happen. At the same point, you say the same thing about winning a World Series. Like, you can make that case. Hey, I think they're... They've beaten the best teams in baseball all season long.
Mm-hmm.
They've gone through their rough patch. Every team goes through it. They seem to be coming out the other side. They've won 72 games without a consistent rotation. The rotation seems to be rounding into form. That's going to make the bullpen less hittable, right? You're not going to overexpose the bullpen, and it's probably going to take pressure off the offense. And oh, by the way, you can make a case that other teams have a better offense. You can make a case that other teams have a better rotation. And you can make the case, I actually don't think you make a case anybody has a better bullpen, but when you string those three things together, that paints the picture of a team rounding into form that might be the most complete team. And I think that, but again, so that's a World Series team, right? Well, you just hit just enough, you get just enough out of your starting rotation, and six inning on, you turn it over to an elite rotation, or elite bullpen.
Yep.
216-474-0092. So this is not a negative question. It is more of a pragmatic question. I've seen 95, 97, 2000, 2001. I've seen truly great Cleveland baseball teams. 2007 was a World Series winning caliber team. 2016, it was there. They just had to win one more damn game at some point in the final three games of the season. Does it feel like do you actually give the Guardians a healthy chance? Like, are you thinking it's actually a possibility? You put this story in my ear earlier today about Rose Harvey, who's a English marathon runner who finished her Olympic race with a broken leg.
Yeah, she had a stress fracture in her femur. The femur, of course, is the largest bone in the human body, right there in the thigh board. And she had...
Hey, fantasy football owners. The road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A stress fracture in that femur. And she said she got it, like, I don't even know, like early in the race, like the first half hour or so. Yeah. She finished in like 250 something. She finished 78th.
Yeah.
But dude, it's amazing. This woman, she said she would have stopped at a normal marathon, but this is the Olympics.
Yeah. And she and put all this time preparing.
Yeah. She gutted through and grinded to get this finished.
So I actually mean this.
Talk about toughness, man.
Well, yeah. So I actually mean this as a sign of respect. Because sometimes we say things in a microphone and we don't realize how people might hear this. I mean this as a respectful thing. marathon runners and long distance runners in general, y'all are crazy.
Yeah.
And there's so many things that marathon runners normalize that are not normal. This is one of them. Like, this is not the first time I've heard somebody say, hey, yeah, I have a stress fracture in my foot, and I felt myself get injured halfway through the marathon, but I was like, I got to finish it. I put all this work into it. Even, I mean, you know, one of my best friends in the world, Jeremy, his wife, they're both long-distance runners, and they've done marathons. And they're like, yeah, so, you know, accidents happen when you run. And I'm like...
Bathroom accidents?
Yeah. Okay. And I'll be honest with you, you've now made the wrong sell. I've now sold on this idea. One, I will never be a long distance runner. That's not why God put me on this earth. That's not what you do with this build. At the same point, there's a hell no for me. If one of the byproducts that happens when you're running is, hey, be prepared to maybe mess yourself. Hell no. And also, you have to be crazy outside your mind to feel yourself get seriously injured and go, well, it's only another 20 miles or so. We're good.
I don't know, man. Like, the one thing I thought of is, like, my senior year at Ohio State, I think it was the second or third game we're playing Marshall, right? And second quarter, dude catches, like, a quick slant or a hitch, and I come up from, I was playing zone, and I come up to make the tackle, and I just go to tackle the dude's like thigh board, and I stick my arm out, and I snap my radius, like right in the middle, like it's broken, clean break. I'm like, said some cuss words to myself, and I'm like, man, so I start holding my arm like this, and I stayed in for the rest of the series, because I didn't know. I'm like, dude, this is hurting. I mean, I pretty much felt it broken because as I turned my arm, I could feel the bone shifting. It was a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so after the series is over, I've run off to the sideline. Our defensive coordinator, Mark Snyder, I'm like, coach, I'm like, my arm's broken. He like pushed me to the side because he's trying to get a call in the end of the game. I'm like, coach, no, my arm's broken. He looks down and he could see the bone like moving. I mean, it wasn't through the skin, but he could see that it was broken. He said, oh, bleep, trainer, you know, and everyone was like, man, you're so tough because you played through it. And that's not the first time I did it.
Yeah.
My freshman year, Mike Doss, I'm going to make a tackle. Doss comes in like a spear with his helmet down and breaks my hand. Now that one I finished the game with.
So I think a broken hand, because
it hurt.
Like, no, it hurts like hell, but broken hands you can get around. Broken arms, or in this case, a stress fracture in your femur, like that's just, like you're just going to have to go get a forklift for my big self. And you're just going to, I'm going to be like Mama June, all right? You're just going to have to cart me around in that thing until the damn thing heals. I watched a lot of My 600-Pound Life last night. That's how that would become for me. Oh, hey. Every time you move, you feel something in your body click. No. Just get out the forklift. Let's open some of these doors here and give me that My 600-Pound Life treatment.
Okay.
Like this is, okay, because what you're saying, football players do this all the time on a macro level. I stayed in for a series. I stayed in for a game. Staying in for a marathon? Like, there's just no break. Like, I don't know what's more impressive.
And it's every step you're feeling that pain for hours.
She said agony. She said that most of the middle part of the race, like, you know, because we always hear, like, oh, I had all this energy running through, and I was just overcome with the emotion and the moment, and I didn't feel any bit of pain. No, she freely admitted that this marathon runner in the Olympics felt every single sliver of pain for half a marathon before her body finally said, I guess you just don't feel pain anymore. No.
I mean, eventually...
Then I stubbed my toe and I'm out for a day.
I mean, eventually the endorphins gotta kick in. I mean, how do these guys get through these playoff games or the Super Bowl with broken fingers or whatever it may be? a twisted ankle.
Okay, I don't mean to downplay this, because if you do any of this, you are a warrior, and it is awesome.
Yes.
And if you play with a head injury, don't do that. That's not warrior stuff. That's impact your life. Like, we've gotten to the point where don't do that now. But like, when it comes to playing through, I broke my finger, I broke my hand, I hurt my foot, I did this. Warrior stuff. You are a tough ass, tougher than me. Good job out of you. That being said, I think anything that happens to the lower extremities is 10 times worse than anything that happens to your upper body. Because you can just shield yourself. And now broken radius, there's no shielding that, right? It's going to get hit. It will. You're lucky if you don't end up with a compound fracture. But like, I have a stinger. You shouldn't play through that. That's a little easier to play through than I just broke my femur.
Yeah, I mean, stingers suck. I've had them many times, and it goes away. You can go back in the game. The problem is, like, once you've had a stinger, it's very, very common to re-injure that. Like, it's sensitive. Like, another hit on your shoulder, it's probably going to be a stinger.
Yeah, because it stretches out the nerves, right?
Yeah.
So I was listening to...
I had the worst stinger of my life my freshman year against Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that dude who played for the Bengals? He was a running back from Indiana.
Not Jordan Howard. That's where my mind went.
Jeremy something?
Jeremy, oh my God. He was a big-ass dude, too. Jeremy Reed? No, that's a center fielder. Jeremy Hill? No, that was LSU.
Not Jeremy Johnson.
Oh, my God. Didn't he become a fullback?
Yes.
In the NFL? Oh, yeah. That's good stuff.
So, 5'11", 275.
Is that it?
He catches the ball in the flat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm playing nickel. I come up. Again, shoulder right in the thigh board. I'm an ankle biter on a 275-pound dude. Worst stinger of my life. I'm laying on the ground. I'm looking at my arm just flailing back and forth. I have no feeling in my arm.
No control?
No control of my arm. It's just flailing back and forth. And I literally, like, it was an out-of-body experience. Because I'm like, why is my arm moving? I can't feel it. I can't control it.
So, you know the actor Joel Edgerton?
Yes.
I was listening to a podcast with him last night where he tried to do a backflip in somewhere in China in 2000 and landed on his neck. And he thought he was, like, apparently millimeters away from breaking his neck. But what happened is he gave him, like, himself, he stretched the nerves in his arm. And he said for 6 months, he ended up going to a doctor, like, right out of the way. And the doctor said, about 6 months from now, your nerves will go back to where they are. So that dude just dragged an arm around. The doctor said it was the most severe stinger he's ever seen. And Joel Edgerton acted like three movies with basically one arm. 216-474-0092. So there is a English marathon runner who had a stress fracture in her femur while running the marathon in the Olympics. Here's the thing. She finished the race. That is a Tommy, holy crap, tough nuts moment. Then the fact she finished 78th, like, she was better. I don't know how many runners there were. If she was better than five runners, it's impressive. If 78 out of like 150, it might be the most impressive athletic feat I've ever heard of.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood. Nobody.
So we are awaiting Kevin Stefanski's press conference here live from Berea at some point in the next little bit here, as practice is likely to be wrapping up out there in Berea. So as we have that, is that... I honestly, dude, I think this might be the most impressive injury because of the toll that marathon running takes on you. I think this might be the most impressive play through an injury moment I've heard of.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, like, well, okay, Ronnie Lott with a thumb.
Yeah, just cut it off or whatever. Yeah.
That's a
baller, badass move, dude.
Trying to think, what are the other big moments that? Because I feel like
injuries. I mean, yeah. I think Terrell Owens in the Super Bowl is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Oh, there's
for Schilling?
Yeah. Oh,
bloody
Schilling?
Sock?
I still...
You don't think it was real?
No, I don't know. And a lot of it is, Curtis just a super shady human being. Like, if you've heard about any of his dealings with a software company, there seems to be some unethical way that Kirk tends to play things. So that has informed my... my thoughts on Curt Schilling.
All right.
Have you ever read those stories?
I have not. No.
It's not great. It's not great. It shouldn't keep him out of the Hall of Fame. That's pretty stupid. But no. Honestly, you know, the other thing I was thinking of, because you mentioned the Schilling thing, it was self-owned, but Trevor Bauer after Drone Gate, where he's dripping blood on the mound. Again, he did it to himself. You can't give credit to him, but that's pretty damn gutsy out there.
More to come.
I'm just ready to end the segment there?
Oh, it's 55.
All right. Well, I mean, it's 54:39, but
do you want 20 seconds of content?
If you got it.
I was just trying to think of if there's anything else that guys have played through. There's some significant injury. I mean, hell, the flu game, if it was the flu.
216-474-0092.
More pizza.
English runner Rose Harvey ran and finished a marathon with a stress fracture in her one of her legs. I almost said her right leg. I don't know which leg it was. Is this the most impressive playthrough and injury moment to finish the game?
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.